Welcome to Your Valuable Home, the show that's about education for homeowners and residential real estate investors, because smart buyers don't get burned on home purchases or improvements. Hi, I'm contractor Kevin Kennedy, host of Your Valuable Home.
Hi, and I'm Ron Milk, producer and co-host. We're not your average home show.
We'll teach you the right way to choose a contractor, what to look for in quality construction and windows, doors, siding installation, and more, how to compare estimates and avoid huge upfront payments. We'll share projects in the works, trends in kitchen, baths, and exterior home improvements, homeowner horror stories, and how to prevent one from happening to you.
That's right. And we interview experts from across the country about all subjects that impact homeowners and their communities. Everything from new building products, homeowners insurance, what's hot in real estate markets, and what it takes to make a healthy home, and much more.
Get out your notepad every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on 610 ESPN and get a free education on Your Valuable Home. Thanks to our sponsors, Tom Adams Windows and Carpets, with four locations in Churchville, Southampton, Doylestown, and Whitehall in the Lehigh Valley.
Tom Adams is the friendly, family-owned place known for award-winning installation and a wide selection of windows, doors, flooring, siding, exterior stone, awnings, and now decking, too. Tom Adams has been satisfying customers throughout the region for 64 years, and we're proud to say supporting Your Valuable Home into our sixth year on the air. Check out Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. That's TomAdamsWC.com on the web, or call 800-787-0
Right now, it's time for the college. And I, as I said before, I've got to get to talk to my favorite guest of all time. And who do we got coming on today?
And mine as well, yeah. We have Carolyn Blazovsky, who is nationally recognized America's Healthy Home Expert. Last week, she was on talking about all those things that are in your house that could be harmful to you. That you might want to get rid of at this time of the year, spring cleaning, okay? Now we're going to talk about allergies and how they can affect you and what you can do about that. And we're going to talk about spring lawn care and what to watch out for. So, Caroline, welcome back. Second week in a row here. Good to have you back.
Yeah, it seems like we always run long, or we don't get to all the subjects because there's just so much to talk about. If you think about it, every time we get going, I know it's probably my fault that we end up talking about a few other things. We always go off the beaten track, but it's just so much information that people need to absorb to understand what's going on.
Caroline's knowledge is encyclopedic, so it gets into a longer segment, but that's good.
So what's the first thing we're going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about allergies. Talking about allergies. If you're prone to allergies, which I am and you are, Kevin, and I think you too are, right, Caroline?
Yeah, I am.
What steps can you take this time of the year in particular to help minimize the effects in your home? What can you do?
Well, the first thing is you want to be, the first inclination is to open the windows, right? Because it's so beautiful out, we want to. But you have to remember, especially now, you have to be worried about the pollination and all the pollen. So you don't want to be bringing that in, which will also contribute to allergens. So keep your windows closed during the pollen season. It's really important. So you're not cleaning it up, or if you're going to open them, just open them for a brief period, but make sure you wipe up the area around the window and stuff, because you will bring in a lot of pollen. So that's the first thing. And then, on days when it's really just nice clean weather, you're not going to have high relative humidity, then you do want to open up the windows going into June and July and August and really just aerate the house, bring a lot of fresh air in, but only when the relative humidity is under 50%. If it starts to get humid, then you want to close everything up and turn on your HVAC or turn on your air conditioning.
Huh. Well, what if it's warm enough you don't like the outside air? Because I'm guilty of that. I like to keep the windows closed because allergies were a problem for me, which I'll ask you about a little bit further, but I just don't want to have all that pollen and dirt coming into the house. So exactly. Is that something where anybody, whether it's pollen or dirt, just have to have a little bit of air freshness in there every once in a while?
Yeah, I mean, you want to ventilate. I mean, I think that what's nice about this time of year is that you can ventilate and open up the windows. But to your point, you've got pollen and you've got particulate and things like that. And that's why it's important for people, if they don't have it on their HVAC system, to run a HEPA filter. So you can either put that on your HVAC system in your home, or you can run an independent air purifier just to clean out, all that kind of particulate that gets in the air. And especially if you live, in the city areas like Philadelphia or New York or LA, you're going to really have a lot of particulate from pollution. So having a HEPA purifier is really good in the house.
You just mentioned city dwellers. Are city dwellers as bombarded with pollen as the country people?
Yes. And the problem is, well, I think it's twofold. So the city, you're exposed to much more particulate. And I think we may have talked about it in our last segment, but we talked about that disease states are really influenced by particulate. And they're starting to find more and more studies, like with Alzheimer's and dementia, that people who are exposed to high city levels of particulate, and that's like the little things that come from pollution, off cars, off engines, those things really can contribute to making disease states worse if you have the genetic, the genetic gene for it. So it's important to use the HEPA when in the city. And then, of course, like you said, out in the country or more rural areas, you're going to experience a lot more pollen. And then, of course, you're going to have more tree pollen and grass and ragweed and things like that. So the HEPA filter also works there. So either way, you're going to get hit. So you need to help yourself a little bit.
What about your car? I mean, when you get into your car, when I got in my car the other day, it's the period of the year now where it starts, where you get that yellow
all over the car, yeah.
Coating all over your car. Is it getting into the car too?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just the same thing as you want to shower off your body, you want to wash your car more frequently, and also change those filters. You know, people forget to change their cabin filters all the time in cars, and it's really important. So going into spring is a good time to change the cabin filter and make sure that you're getting it done. And you can do it yourself. You know, people always say, oh, I don't want to take it into the dealership, I just don't have the time. Just, you know, you can pick them up at the dealer and put them in yourself, and it's a really good thing. So change cabin filters.
Something I would not think of. How about that?
Yeah, and you need to. And because, you know, you realize you drive in your car so much, and that air is not, you know, once you get a dirty filter, it's not filtering well, so it's important to do
I'm
it.
I'm looking at Kevin right now. When was the last time you changed your filter?
On which truck? The 15-year-old one
either
that I
one,
have?
Either one.
15 years ago.
15 years ago. There you go.
Kevin.
He's an arch offender. He's an arch offender.
Your car so much, Kevin, too. You know, if you don't think about it, but you're breathing that air all the time, so...
Yeah, I can understand. I do like to open the windows up in the summertime, as long as the sun's not directly beating on me. But in the winter, absolutely. I keep the windows closed because I get so cold. I crank the heat up, and you're right.
I close the window. I get cold, too. I can't stand cold. Let me ask you this. I don't know. Maybe it's my imagination, but in the Philadelphia area. Now, I don't spend a lot of time in Philly, per se. I spend a lot of time in the Philadelphia area. It seems like allergies are getting worse. Is that my imagination or is something changing here?
No, I think that the climate change that we're experiencing, we know that higher levels of carbon dioxide contribute to things pollinating faster. It actually, there's been studies where they show that bees pollinate quicker, mold spores proliferate more. So, you know, based on the air quality and the poor air quality and the more carbon dioxide that you have, those things are going to happen. I think that that's, you know, there's been studies, there was a big article, I forget, in the New York Times or one of the big publications a while ago, and it talked about that this is a real thing. So, yeah, definitely.
So I'm not imagining it.
And it's not just in the trees. Those are also proliferating faster, but also other things like mold and bee pollen and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I've got a question for you. Maybe it's a little bit more on the medical side. Is that when I was growing up, my mother took me to the allergist. We were getting shots, and it just never worked.
Your shots never worked?
Never worked. Okay. I tell you, right around May, when the ragweed turned on, I would just sneeze upon sneeze. I had the snot coming out of the nose. I just couldn't stop it.
Thanks for sharing that.
It was a tough time in my life. But over the past 3 to 4 years, I don't take any medicine now, and I don't even sneeze at all during this time.
Yeah, I think it's well. Ragweed is in the fall predominantly. I mean, like when a lot of people react to it, it's in the fall with the molds too. But it is your bucket, Kevin. And I think that when, you know, if you live in a cleaner home, if you're not exposed to as many things, you're going to have less allergens. So I think when your bucket's full, then it's things put you over the edge easier. And I've seen in 20 years of, you know, working with clients that seems to be the case. So it's really important for people to, you know, not have mold in their homes and make sure that, you know, and I'm assuming that, you know, your house is pretty well maintained just by the fact that you're a contractor. So, you know, people, I think those things make a difference in keeping it clean and not having a lot of dust in the house and things that add up to that bucket. So when you get hit with a whole bunch of pollen, you're not overreacting to it.
Yeah, but this has been I've been in three homes over the past 4 years down the shore. I don't have any allergy problems whatsoever.
Last year, though, didn't you?
But a few times. But it was once or twice. But back years ago, growing up, maybe I was like 42, 43 years old. I'm telling you, sneezing was, it was just breathing. I kept sneezing. And that's how bad it was. When I get one of those attacks and when I'm outside, the guy who works with me, Dave, was just laughing at me because I had to sit down because after sneezing 30 plus times in a row, I couldn't stand up. And that's,
oh, it's awful.
Oh, it wears you out. It's absolutely.
I mean, just having a cold, which is kind of like, I think I'm having a cold now, and it's awful. You just feel lousy. I mean, sneezing, just, it's so abrupt to your whole body, and you're like, do it 60 times in a row. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
It is.
It's exhausting. Yeah, you can really wear yourself out.
And my wife calls me. She says, you know, over exaggerate. I'm like, just tell me when to stop sneezing. I couldn't stop sneezing. But it was amazing. It turned off. Now, I don't know.
Well, like I said, it might be your environment, too. Like, your environment may have changed things in your environment. I mean, that's my belief. You know, I believe that all adds up.
Could be pet dander, too.
I mean, we do keep a clean house, but it was just if I'm outside. Anytime I walked outside for 90% of my life, it was that bad. But now, I was doing a job maybe about 15 years ago, and I was working on a house, and she was an allergist. And she said, why don't you try this? Before allergy season, when it starts for you, you can put this nasal, you have to start a couple weeks before the nasal spray, put that in and take one of the Claritins when it starts. But you have to start before all this allergy stuff happens. So if it starts May 1st, you want to start mid-April to start applying the product. And then when it does, and it was working. So I don't know if that did any damage to my nose, because you're putting that spray up there and it burns when it goes up in there. You do two sprays in the morning and two sprays in the...
Well, I think the sprays with the steroid, if you use them continually, can be harmful to you, right, Caroline?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, you know, you want to try to deal with things more holistically, obviously, if you can. But some people have, you know, really terrible allergies. But that's why, like, I work with so many clients and we try to reduce that bucket or reduce the things that can contribute. And also, like, things may be blooming, like people put bushes in around the house, and that's a good thing to kind of segue into, you know, springtime. You want to watch what you put in, you know, like if you're doing a lot of landscape, you don't want to put things that are really flowery or aromatic. Like, rose bushes are a big thing people will put in a lot around the house. And if you've got a sensitivity to rose bush, you're going to really be having a hard time when it comes to the spring. So, you know, try to think about what you're putting close to the house, so you're not drawing that in.
It's tough planning, because you have to, in this area, you got to plan for deer too. Deer like a lot of things, and next thing you know, you go out, you pay like $50 for this bush, and it's gone the next morning because the deer had a feast on it. Let me ask you one question before we get into the outside. Is there anybody out there that is not bothered by the allergens in the air?
Yeah, I mean, I think certain people don't have outside allergens, and they aren't triggered by them. And certain people are. It's like some people have peanut allergens and some people don't, or susceptible, or some people have cat allergens, you know, and some people don't. But what we find in houses is that when you have a lot of anything, right? So if you have a lot of cat, and then you have a lot of dog, and then you have a lot of pesticide, and you have all these things add up, and then eventually you're going to see somebody in that house who doesn't feel well. So it's trying to keep that bucket low and not be exposed to all that is really helpful.
Maybe especially for people who have asthma problems, right?
Yeah, if you're prone, then definitely you have to live a completely different lifestyle.
All right.
Let's say somebody who doesn't.
Let's get into the outside. What should you avoid? A lot of people still take care of their own. I don't anymore. You do. Do you take care of your own property? Yeah.
I do.
I do.
Caroline? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you have to be concerned about in terms of insecticides and all the stuff that you...
Well, if you're asking me, because
yeah,
I am. You know, I do a completely organic lawn, and I don't believe in using pesticide and fertilizer. But what I do a lot of is going into the season, and I can't take credit. I have to say my significant other, I got to give him his kudos. But every season, you know, before the spring kind of hits, you know, about this time of year, we reseed the lawn. And it's really important, because people forget, you know, it's sort of a balance that happens, and you don't want the weeds overtaking. You always kind of have to keep the grass growing. And what happens a lot of times is people let the weeds take over and they strangle out the grass. And then you get this overgrowth of, you know, like crabgrass and weeds and things. So we are really conscientious about doing a reseeding every season. And that really helps to keep all the weeds down. That's the first thing. And then at the end of the season, when you're doing a lot of your general maintenance or cleanup, people are really apt to get rid of the leaves, and you don't want to. That's your fertilizer. So you want to, you know, go out there and chop them up and use them on the lawn, instead of a lot of people will blow them away or have the county will come take the leaves. And it's a mistake, because it's natural fertilizer. So those are the types of things you can do to kind of have a beautiful lawn. I mean, our lawn is actually, like, you know, exquisite. So, and we have a really beautiful landscape. So you don't have to use all these, people think in their head they have to use pesticide and chemicals and to have a great lawn and a really nice outside, and you don't.
So you're saying crabgrass is bad, because I kind of like it. It's low maintenance.
Low maintenance, yeah.
I've always had great crabgrass. My lawns were great. They look great when they were cut. But it's crabgrass because I don't do anything with my lawn.
Yeah, your neighbors rave about it.
well, you have to watch too. Whichever type of grass you have, like if you put it in, it'll go over to your neighbors. So you know these things kind of transmit and they pollinate. So then they end up having a different type of grass. We have that that grass. I forget what it's called. It's it turns yellow.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. My wife was complaining about this. She said around the pool area. She said, "Why is the grass still yellow?" I said, "It's called zoysia grass."
What is it called again?
Zoysia grass.
So I have a whole big patch of this in my backyard, which drives me crazy. But it, you know, we try to, you know, deal with it. But the neighbors don't want it, so we try to keep it under control. But
it's thick, and you don't have to worry about the weeds getting in it. That's one of the things about that. It stays so healthy. But you're right. If you get it, it's brown for a while. Half my grass is green, and then the other half is brown. And it's not that it's dead. I told her. I said it just has to. It's dormant, and once it comes up, it's going to look like it did last year. It's going to look great. But she's like, "What about all these dead spots?" I'm like, "Yeah, it'll fill in with crabgrass. Don't worry about it."
I spot seed with there's certain seeds come now with I don't know what it is, chopped up paper or whatever it is in there, and it keeps the seed down, right?
You put water
on it and it stays moist, and then next thing you know, in about 3 days you got grass. It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
It's really good too. I mean, you know, obviously if you see, then you can use some, we usually use hay or something, but you know, just to keep everything down. But you want to reseed like frequently. And then, you know, also look at what you have. If you have shade, if you don't have shade, and then you want to use the appropriate, you know, grass for whichever area you have. But it's, you know, it's important to do. And it really keeps your lawn just thick and nice and really beautiful. And you don't have to use all these chemicals and stuff on it.
You know what I did over the past couple of weeks? And we started when we moved in last July is we talked with somebody about compost. And my daughter and I are going to have this little thing. We're going to do a vegetable garden. And we started back then where we took some of the leaves, we took the greens, we took the trees down, cut grass. We started mixing coffee grounds, eggshells. We started putting it in and mixing it in since last August. And then what I did in December is I actually got a rototiller, my mom's rototiller, and I started back up and let it sit again for another 3-4 months. And I just did it again because I wanted to do everything organic. I did not want to put any pesticides down on the soil. So when I start planting, I know there's no chemicals on it. And I don't want to use chemicals.
Especially not on your food.
Chemicals with tomatoes with chemicals on them are a bad thing, right?
No, and we've been saying for like 20 years, you know, I had been preaching about glyphosate, which is, you know, what people know as Roundup, that it's been problematic. I mean, this has been a long known thing, and now because of the media and the lawsuits that have happened with it, people are now conscious that it is a carcinogen and that it really is not healthy. But, you know, I used to see women holding their babies in one hand, right, and spraying Roundup in the other, and I was just like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
crazy.
Make you cringe. You know? Is it still out there? Is it still on the shelves?
Oh yeah, of course.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. Just there's a big class action lawsuit now that's occurring.
Well, is there any other product that can be comparable that it's not as harmful to humans?
Yeah, well, what the best combination is, and I forget the combo that we use, but it's vinegar. You use vinegar, a little bit of soap, like dish detergent, and then I think it's baking soda. It's the combination of the three, and you just spray it on the weeds, and it kills them immediately. It's completely natural.
How about that?
So I'm Googling it. So once I find it, I will let you guys know, but it's fantastic.
So the other thing you can do is what I do, pool weeds. Pull them out.
Yeah, just pull them out.
Yep. Pull them out. Get rid of them. Of you know, do it periodically.
But you've got to make sure you get that whole root because that weed will come back up.
No, again. I dig down and I pull them out.
Do you want to come to my house?
I'm never going
to
use. I'm never going to use a
boatload
weed
of weeds. You can come pick up right now.
Never going to use.
Yeah, I got a boatload too, Ron. You coming over?
I'll be there. I'll be there this afternoon with my.
You
boss.
Offered. You say, hey, you did a great job with it. Come on over.
Boy, okay, so we're going to give the recipe for the natural weed killer, so everybody can write this down. So 1 gallon of white vinegar.
1 gallon of white vinegar.
Yep. 1 cup of salt, table salt. You could use sea salt, whatever. And then 1 tablespoon of liquid dish soap. And then you combine all the ingredients in a spray bottle and treat the weeds at the sunniest time of the day for best results. So you're just going to take, I make up a big concoction of, you know, like in one of those sprayers. And then we spray everything. And you know what it's really great for is moss. Like if you just have moss growing on your walkway or on your steps or even the side of the house, just spray it and it'll be dead in the next day. But you have to do it when it's sunny because as soon as the sun hits it, it just kills the weed. And it's completely natural. You know, you don't have to worry about kids, pets, nothing.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I just had an ant problem. You know, the springtime starts to rain. Ants all want to come into your house and party. And I got
I love getting rid of ants. I can tell you what to do. I love
that. Well, I used, you know what taro is? Taro?
Yeah, you use the boric acid?
Yeah, it's borax. Yeah. It's borax, which is in laundry detergent. And it's basically sugar water. The sugar water attracts them, and then they get knocked out by the borax, right?
Yeah, and you can make your own, too. It's easy. You just you can get boric acid or borax, and you take one part to 10 parts. I use honey because they, like, love it.
Oh.
And I had carpenter ants really bad. I never thought I'd get rid of them, and they're gone.
They're gone.
Great. Yeah.
So make your own. You don't have to get that. What would you put it in? What do you put it in?
I just took a little piece of cardboard and I made a cardboard strip, and then I wiped the combination one part borax or boric acid and 10 parts honey. I mixed it together and like swiped it on like a little rectangle piece of cardboard and then just put those around. And you want to get them where they're coming in. So you follow them because you don't want to kill them. And like people will think, you want to kill them. You want them to take that bait and take it back to the queen because the queen is the controller of like everything.
Take it back to the colony.
Hmm. Yep. And she in particular, she has to die in order for the colony to die. Wow. So if she's alive, it's amazing. Like she sends out all these like little signals to these ants and tells them through like pheromones and all kinds of, you know, chemical compounds what to do. It's really cool. But you have to kill her. And if you don't get her, then the colony continues.
Well, I must have got the queen of my house because they're gone. I mean, I had them all over the place. They were getting into my living room. They started between the kitchen and the foyer. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
And then that's not really where they were coming from. I did the tracking routine, right?
Yeah.
And I had taro set up all over the house, and I finally found that they were coming in by the foundation in the dining room, and it was just swarming all over the place.
Oh yeah.
So I put three taro things down there, and apparently the queen was in that spot. If you see them all clustered, the queen's usually in that area, and I must have gotten her.
Well, those are the small ones. Now, Caroline, you said you had carpenter ants at your house at one point.
Carpenter ants, yeah. And they're bad. And carpenter ants can come from, like, really far away. Like, they don't just, like, traditionally, the nest is, like, outside. Like, so if you have them in your house, it'll traditionally be outside far away. It can be, like, 10 feet away in a wood pile or an old tree. So, and then they just find their way in, and they go quite a distance. So it's really hard. It's a process. So you have to keep keep the traps out, and that you've got to just let them keep coming because people are, like, want to kill them. You don't, because you need them to transmit that back to her. And eventually it took about I'd say a month or so, and then they were all gone. They just disappeared.
It takes a while. So I didn't do a bad thing. I did a good thing with the taro, right? I could make my own though.
I'm thinking if you have carpenter ants inside the house, wouldn't that be what I've seen as I'm doing construction, that when I do see carpenter ants, if I'm pulling windows or siding down, it's a moist area where the wood's really sup and wet, and the nests are inside the house because it's damp wood that they're living in.
Yeah, they don't, like, people think they eat wood. First off, they don't. They eat, like, regular, like, food and sugar and things like that. But they'll hollow out the wood to make their nest.
Correct.
And, like, so where my office is, where I had them, it was, like, an 1800s house. So you're going to have some old, like, you know, creepy stuff that's, like, there. But there wasn't really anything in particular. They were coming in around a window, and they were just climbing up the side of the house, and that's how they were getting in. So they're really smart, you know, and they just do stuff. But just put out the traps, make your own. You can set them up. Try to find where they're coming in. Sometimes it's hard because they go quite a distance, but it works fantastic.
They do, and they're fast, too. I mean, you can wake up one morning and have one ant, and the next morning you've got them all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like those sugar ants. I have those, too. They just come in at certain times of year. You know, the sugar, that's what you're talking about, Ron, the little guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I remember years ago when we had talked, I was taking a picture of a car that said, hey, look, we're a pesticide company. We're going to be able to kill your ants, and then we're green. We're healthy for you. And I remember talking to you saying, well, if it can kill the bug, what can it do for us?
Exactly. Well, the borax destroys their digestive system, and that's why you have to mix it with something that they, you know, will eat. The combo right, you need to have enough of it that it takes care of them. Because if you kill them, right, you've got to have it so they can bring it back to her. Because if you make it too strong, people say, oh, I'll just make it strong, right? But if you do that, then you'll kill the ant, and he won't have time to make it back to the nest. So you don't want to do that. You want to just make it just a little bit. It
kind of works the same way as bees do in their hive with the queen, right? Queen rules.
Yeah. Oh my God, they're so smart. Like when I had this carpenter ant thing, I went down to, you know, and you can go take the ants down to your local agricultural center. So what county you live in, it was fantastic. And they told me all about how they operate, and ants are just amazing. And they're all female run society, which I find interesting.
Go females.
Yeah. But I know when people always say to me, hey, listen, you know, you're doing the sodding, you're doing the windows, we want to stop the ants from coming in. And I said, listen, here's the things we do, which, and again, I've ever seen a contractor do, but I said, there's no way to stop an ant from coming in your house. It's just impossible. And I said, anybody
well,
that does it.
Keeping the water down is the key. Like, so when you talk about relative humidity, right, keeping the mold down, that's another reason you want your relative humidity in the house low, because everything will be dry and they're not going to be attracted to it. So that's why running a dehumidifier during the spring and summer is like key. You have to do it.
Now, would you be running a dehumidifier a lot in the wintertime?
No, because you're naturally your humidity when you run the heat, it's going to be low. Only, you know, I usually say it goes on in March, the end of March, and then you'll run it now till, you know, December. But sometimes we get these weird influxes of like 70 degree days now, you know, in January. So you may have to put it on temporarily. But most of the time it's when the ground is cold, Kevin, and then we get the hot day that comes in, that's when you condensate. You know, you get this dew point that causes the condensation to happen, and that's when you have to worry about it in houses. So mostly spring and fall are the worst.
All right, so I should turn it back on, because we did it in the winter because it was so wet and the backyard's so wet, and some of that moisture penetrates towards the back wall and you can feel it down there. It's,
sure,
it's moist down there. So I want to run it to be able to, again, recirculate the air.
Yep.
And then when we redo that, what's that?
Go ahead. No, there's a great new Dehu out. Thermastore puts it out. We sell it. It's the Santa Fe Advanced 100. And it's a phenomenal. I just got one, and I enjoy it very much. And it has like a pad that you can put down. It'll tell you, you know, it'll alert your phone. It has a whole app linked to it. And it basically will tell you like your relative humidity, your temperature, if you have a moisture problem. And I love it because if you go away, you don't ever have to worry. You know, it just, it'll, somebody will tell you, and then you can go right over. And it takes about 100 pints of water out per day. So it's really a cool unit.
We got about 4 minutes left here. I want to squeeze two questions in here, which are near and dear to my heart. Say, if your property is near an area where the local municipality sprays for mosquitoes or whatever they're spraying for, how do you protect yourself and your family? How do you do that?
That's a really good question. I mean, it's really challenging. I mean, find out, you know, make sure they will alert you. So if you let the township know that you have, you know, a sensitivity, you're concerned about allergies, asthma, they have to notify you when they're going to spray. So that's very important. If you can, get notified. Make sure you keep all your windows closed. And then don't wear your shoes, you know, outside and wear them inside, because you'll track it in. So make sure you have inside shoes and those stay outside. But make sure the windows are closed. It's hard. I mean, it's very, very hard when you live that close.
Hmm. How about this? I've read that ticks are proliferating. I mean, there are different varieties of ticks. There's a new variety that can really cause a lot of damage. What's the best way, when you're out gardening, what's the best way to protect yourself? Because you can pick up a tick just like that.
That's right. The new, there's a woman, I think it's a woman-owned business, out in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, but they're all over, where they use natural pesticide. They use cedar oil. It's a combination to spray the lawn. So if you have a lawn, you can get the cedar oil application for ticks. It's really phenomenal. So that's the first thing. You know, if you have kids and they're going to be going out, make sure that you get, you know, that type of spraying done. You don't need to use pesticide. There are companies that obviously spray for ticks, but don't use that.
Use a natural cedar
company,
oil.
Right?
Where do you get that?
Cedar.
In the hardware store?
You can, but there's companies now that do applications. They do a combination.
Huh.
So it's like cedar oil, and I'm looking it up as I talk to you because I can't remember what the combo is. But it's cedar oil and diatomaceous earth. And there's companies that actually come out and do tick control, and they spray your lawn, and it's all organic, natural. You know, you don't have to worry about it, you know, being a problem. So it's cedar oil and diatomaceous earth is the combo.
Now what about pets? Would that be harmful to pets or no?
Yeah, it's much safer. I mean, you know, I'm always like, even though something's natural, you just want to be careful. You know, cedar wood is essential oil. But, you know, just don't, when it's being applied, just don't go out, you know, and walk around in it. Try to be a little bit more cognizant that you just had it done and let the application sit. But that's much better than using a, you know, insecticide for sure.
How about people who, a number of products out there, Frontline, I think is one of them, put it on a dog. You put it on a dog, right, and you squeeze it out and you put it on a dog.
Dog's laying in our bed. And
Is that harmful to humans? I mean,
it's linked to, you know, they tell you right away that, you know, it's for women who are pregnant. environment. You should not be exposed to the animals.
Don't expose yourself to it. Yeah.
Exactly. So you're much better using a natural, like I said, use the cedar oil, have a company come use that with the diatomaceous, or spray your lawn. Make sure you're wearing, you know, if you're gardening and stuff like that, you got to be wearing long pants and always shower. Like, you know, when you come in from gardening, you've got to take a shower and scrub down and use like a tea tree oil. Soap is always good. Those things kind of like, you know, repel. A lot of things don't like it. So use a tea tree oil. It's essential oil soap. But yeah, you just need to really be vigilant about taking a shower when you get in, checking yourself.
The other thing I do, I mean, I just did it. I put my mulch down on the side of my house. And when I come in, I get those clothes off, throw them in a washer immediately. Don't let them sit around, right?
Exactly. Because, because if you pick up a tick, you know, then it ends up walking across your lawn and then you get it, you know, in your house and then you pick it up somewhere else.
Okay. Is there anything else we have to be concerned about out in the yard?
You know, just this time of year, you know, you just brought up mulch. So I think a good thing to talk about is just if you're mulching, you don't want to put the mulch too close to the house. You know, I just saw a mulch fire the other day. You know, we get wind and then we get a lot of direct sun at this time of year and it can ignite very easily. So, you know, just be vigilant about not putting mulch very close to the house. You don't want to ignite anything. You don't want your house to catch fire. So always like put a buffer. If you're going to put mulch, you know, try to have stones and, you know, I have a buffer around my house of just stone and then I have mulch. So making sure people are aware that mulch real close to the house is not good. And also for the, have you guys ever seen the molds that they kind of like spawn off and
artillery
spray your house
fungus
with black mold?
Yep, artillery fungus. It's little black dots all over the siding. Yeah, I know that very well.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's another reason you don't want mulch right up against your property. So.
All right, all good ideas, all good ways to save yourself a lot of trouble in the springtime.
And doing it healthy also.
Doing it healthy. Mm-hmm. So, Caroline, we're out of time, but again, You always go off the charts. You take it off the charts, and we appreciate that.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
All right.
And listen, if you got a cold, I hope you feel better.
Thanks. Oh, me too.
I know you do. Yeah, I know you do. All right. We will talk soon.
All right. Again.
Thanks a bunch.
Guys.
All right. We'll talk in a little bit.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more Your Valuable Home, sponsored by Tom Adams Windows and Carpets. Check them out at TomAdamsWC.com.